ABC Radio Australia.
Well, Rapa Nui, or Easter Island, is world famous for its giant stone statues, known as the Moai. But where did the idea of this type of ancient Polynesian worship come from? Well, that's the question anthropologist Carl Lupo has been trying to answer through his research, which aims to find the Polynesian homeland. And the search for that answer recently took Carl and a team of researchers to one of the remotest communities in the Pacific. We have Carl joining us this morning. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning.
Appreciate your time this morning. I know you're joining us from Binghamton University in the eastern United States. I have to ask, why did your search lead you to Ontong Java in Solomon Islands?
Yeah, it's a good question because it seems like a very unlikely place when you think about Easter Island as being the eastern part of the Pacific. And Ontong Java is so far west, so it's sort of an unlikely place to start. But you know, we started with the question: where did this idea of giant statues come from? Where the Polynesians brought it with them? They brought this tradition across the Pacific, across eastern Polynesia. But where is the source of that? And the answer started with actually a linguist, Pilo Wilson, who's at the University of Hawaii in Hilo. He sort of looked at the language evidence and found that his best account for the origins of Eastern Polynesian languages are actually what are in the central northern outliers, of which Ontong Java is a central part of. So a really linguistic connection that led us to this idea.
And I suppose when you were on this, you know, excavation, was there any challenges, though, that you faced while there?
Oh, absolutely. it's a place, it's such a remote island that, you know, one of the reasons no one's really investigated this before is it's so hard to get to. There's not regular ferry service, there's not planes. You have to basically catch a freighter that may or may not come every couple of months and then may or may not come, you know, pick you up later. You know, it's just been really remote. In fact, the last sort of systematic study of the island took place in the 30s, you know, really many, many decades ago. And, you know, it's literally because it's so remote and difficult to get to. So just that was the biggest challenge to begin with. How are we going to get there? Where are we going to stay? How are we going to get permission from the islanders to even do this work when it's such a remote place? So that was one of the biggest challenges.
While I was reading into it, I know that you guys weren't the first ones to sort of, you know, discover this, but there was like a team from Germany. Could you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, back in the early 20th century, in the 1908 and 10, the Germans were, you know, sailing around, you know, doing ethnographic and sort of natural history studies of the islands of Micronesia. And they came to the island and did sort of an extensive study that really documented the ethnographic history, the artifacts, material culture, but really didn't do any archaeology, but documented sort of the best case of what was going on at the time. And that gave us hints that there were some really interesting things that were going on there materially that could be connected to statues.
You know, obviously we talk a lot about climate change, right? So I'm just wondering, has that, you know, like even environmental change, did that add a bit of an urgency, you know, given the places like Ontong Java that could be affected by rising sea levels? Was that part of your investigation?
Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, this question about the origins of Eastern Polynesian people and the language and their traditions, you know, if they came from these remote tiny atolls, we needed to really look at those places before they go away. I mean, the atolls are only a couple of meters above sea level. They're the first that are going to be hit by changes in sea level. And if we didn't get there at some point soon, it may be a point where no one will ever know. And this, you know, sort of vital question will never be answered. So we really figured we needed to go there and start doing this work. Otherwise, you know, it would remain a mystery.
And one of those findings in Ontong Java was the giant Pacific rat. I'm like, what does the presence of this rodent tell you about our ancient Polynesian, like, migration paths?
That's a great question. The rat seems like, you know, how can that tell you about humans? One interesting trait that we found really everywhere across Polynesia is that as Polynesians moved from island to island, they brought with them, whether it was on purpose or just sort of a stowaway, the Polynesian rat. And this is Rattus excellens, a small little arboreal rat that lives in trees and loves palm nuts. So each set of canoes seemed to have brought a series of rats with them. And through the genetics of looking at those rats, we can actually trace where people went to and what sequence of islands they moved across the Pacific. So it's a really kind of great tracer of population movement. And we found Rattus excellens remains in the excavations we did at Ontong Java. And now we're anxiously waiting genetic evidence to sort of look and see if we can see that pattern.
Wow. If you've just joined us, my guest this morning is anthropologist Professor Carl Lupo from Binghamton University. We're discovering the origins of Polynesia, or mostly, I suppose, around Eastern Polynesia. Carl, when most researchers think that the homeland of Polynesians is Samoa, but you've ruled this out, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, that's always been the traditional story, is that, you know, these big islands in Tonga and Samoa are the homeland of Eastern Polynesians, so the direct homeland of Eastern Polynesians. And it makes sense in the perspective of, this is a large landmass, lots of people, and that this would have been a good source of populations. But when we look at the details, things just don't add up that was the direct place from which people left. We don't see, the language doesn't match up, as Pila Wilson has really documented. And when we look at the material culture, we don't see many of the things that we find elsewhere across Eastern Polynesia. For example, in Rapa Nui, in Easter Island, we see the giant statues, these giant anthropomorphic figures, and we don't see that kind of tradition in Samoa. And we know that people brought this tradition with them, because we see it in multiple islands, large statue construction. So it can't be, if it's not in Samoa, it must have come from somewhere else. People brought that with them. So we've been looking for, where would we have find those early origins? Where's the place that people must have started with this tradition? And it doesn't look like it's Samoa.
I feel, though, obviously, you know, while you're on your excavation journey, that the trip sort of felt like a needle in the haystack, right? You know, you're down there on the dirt trying to find things, you know, to indicate what could be connected to us present. I mean, like, yeah, what was that sort of process like for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, the atoll, Anton Java, is the world's largest atoll, and it's, you know, some 50 miles around. It's a gigantic, gigantic atoll. It's only a couple hundred meters across, it's a little wider at some places than others. But we had to excavate, dig a hole somewhere across this huge area where we might find evidence of the earliest occupation of the island, because we were really looking at, for when did people first get there, and what, you know, what are the traits of those people? And so, you know, where do you start? I mean, every hole you dig could be 6 inches from the evidence you're looking for. So we had to be really careful to figure out, to do some coring and to do some sort of landscape analysis to try to figure out where is the best possible location that could potentially find that evidence. And we were lucky. We actually found 2 meters deep of deposits with radiocarbon dates going down, and now we're in the process of analyzing them. But it really was a needle in the haystack operation that we, you know, yeah, we just guessed.
And what was it like having to be able to sort of interact, I suppose, with the people there? What stories were they able to tell you?
It was a really fantastic opportunity to work with the people there. I mean, their interest, you know, they don't know a lot of the, you know, their own history, in the sense of, where did they come from? And a lot of that knowledge has been lost over the years. And they're very deeply interested in it, because they're Polynesians. You know, this is really close to the Solomon Islands, which are Melanesian, very different languages. But here are these Polynesians living there with different kinds of traditions. They're, you know, trying to understand their origin is something that's very, very important to them. And really understanding their central role in the colonization of Eastern Polynesia is particularly important, as they're trying to, they need to raise their profile to say, this place matters as some place that, you know, we can't afford to lose with climate change, and we need to document this and understand that. So it was a really fantastic experience working with them.
Yeah, so Carl, with that, now that you've got that sort of information, what now, I suppose, as an anthropologist, what do you use this information for, and how much can our people in the Pacific use it?
Well, I mean, part of it is understanding identity, like, how are you connected to others? Polynesia is a fantastic network of people who moved across this vast space, you know, with canoes, interacting in different ways and different patterns, you know, sharing language, sharing traditions, and really connecting this really shows, so lets us understand, where did this come from? How did this evolve? How did the different stepping stones happen? How did these challenges of traversing this vast ocean with canoes take place? So really, you know, sort of enriching that history and sort of sharing how this amazing story that is Eastern Polynesia.
I think this reminds me a lot of, I want to take a step out of the past and maybe ask you about something maybe more present now, is, you know, Disney's Moana. Do you think that's helped to maybe popularize or mainstream Polynesian history? I mean, do you think that's even reviving interest in a profession like yours?
Well, definitely. I mean, I think people see that there's, you know, this amazing culture with this incredible depth and rich of you know, rich with traditions and you know, ways of life. And, you know, certainly Moana and other, you know, sort of popular versions of that show that this incredible culture. And it's fantastic to see that spread across the world as people realize this is an amazing place and that, you know, they're small islands and they're very disparate, but they're connected in this very interesting way that deserves study and deserves, you know, sort of respecting.